In this series of podcasts, we offer stories of innovations and impact, insightful conversations, and visionary thinking at the leading edge of finance.
Welcome to the first Reimagine Money podcast. What you're about to listen to is a series of excerpts from an interview with Mark Finzer, founding member of RSF Social Finance and current chair of the board. Leading the conversation is John Bloom, RSF's Senior Director of Organizational Culture. John opens the dialogue by asking Mark to discuss the term social finance.
I think for us, John, wasn't it in 2004 that we really decided to more consciously refer to our work as social finance?
Oh, definitely.
And the reason why, I think, was because clearly finance is a very broad term as opposed to investing. And we really wanted to be sure that finance incorporated different qualities, which would probably a good catch-all is the word social, because one is, with the word social, one's actually considering multiple stakeholders, you know, as opposed to antisocial finance.
Right.
So I think that was in many ways the view that we thought of at that time. And, I mean, we were using it, I would say, probably the banks in Europe, like Triodos Bank and the GLS Bank and others, have used it longer than we have,
mm-hmm.
the idea of social finance. Again, because when we really was trying to build community and cross awareness, of the different stakeholders within every financial transaction.
Hmm.
And so that kind of consciousness was what we were really trying to bring about. And so that state of where social finance is today, I think, has moved quite dramatically since 2004, and certainly since 1984 when RSF started. But I would say, I think one of the themes that came up really over the last 4 or 5 years has been around, well, okay, if you have social finance, then what is the impact that you're trying to achieve? And what are the results as a consequence of such social finance? And for me, it's intriguing that the word impact investing has become far more the catchword than social finance. And I'm not really stuck on it per se, because I don't think it matters what term is, as long as people are doing good things. But I do find myself sometimes wondering whether the word impact is too shorthand, because we know that finance in general, however it's been practiced throughout the millennia, has created impact.
Right.
Whether it's all been positive, I think we all would agree it hasn't been. So it does. There's nothing that qualifies what kind of impact people are wanting with that term. And so, you know, I'm not stuck on it, because I think, at the end of the day, I think it will just be good investing and good finance. If we're successful, it'll just be finance. And if we're successful, it'll just be investing.
You mean by having basically become the norm?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
It'll have become the norm. So I think these are all terms that are transitional.
Uh-huh. Well, it's interesting because, in a way, impact investing... of course, is in a way investor centric, which is
exactly.
which is mostly what the field of investing has been. It's like how do I invest my money to maximize return, in the simplest way. And at
RSF, we really want to take more of a holistic view, which is not just have it from one point of view from the investor standpoint, but from, again, the multiple stakeholders, from the borrower, from the grantee, from the investee perspective.
Mm-hmm. One of the comments that has been made about social finance, even as a concept, is that you can't possibly have finance that isn't social, by definition, because in order for finance to happen, it takes relationships and transactions and all sorts of different varieties, and therefore it takes people. So what do we mean by social finance that's different than...
I think it's being conscious of it. I mean, yeah. It's not just allowing the chips to fall the way they can, but to really consciously be mindful of the consequences of one's financing.
Hmm.
And what the ripple effect is, and what kind of social impact that could have.
Maybe there are different kinds of capital that circulate in the social finance sector that are drivers of the social finance sector or social enterprise. Is it all the same kind of capital?
It depends from which perspective you're looking at it. In the case of ventures, there's startup capital, and where you get a certain kind of capital from people that have surplus that are willing to take huge amount of risk on the confidence, or at least the hope, that there is a chance that new venture will be successful and will be able to contribute to society. And so you have the financing stages of friends and family, or you have friends, or then you have the angel side. You know, I love that term, angel investor.
And yeah.
And then you really move from that to early stage investment, and then you have expansion stage capital. These are all different levels of capital
mm-hmm.
going into a company. Then that is all on the ownership side, where you become a co-owner of the company, of the enterprise. And then you have the debt side, where you also have a higher risk. But I think what we think of from a social finance standpoint is that the way the money moves and the way the enterprise develops is not just through a one-time transaction, but it's actually through what is built up over time and how that organization or how that enterprise is embedded and integrating itself within their larger community. We at RSF like to talk about this whole idea of associating with a wider constituency and basically creating a different kind of economics and a different kind of social finance that's based on associative principles. And so how do we see it? We see it that all those stakeholders are being engaged, and actually that will create a stronger company, it will create a stronger community, it will create a better possibility for return of the investment. But I think how something is financed, whether it's through an IPO or whether it's done through building more of a distributed ownership, because at the end of the day, ownership can be actually by being a shareholder, but you can also feel like you're an owner if you're using the product or service. I mean, I feel, and I'm sure you do too, I feel like an owner of RSF,
mm-hmm.
But we don't own a penny of it. It's there and for public trust, out of public trust. And yet I think you can develop those qualities of sense of responsibility and ownership.
Well, I think that draws a very important distinction between ownership as a almost a spiritual deed versus ownership as a right.
Yeah.
And those two are not necessarily, it's wonderful when they're the same, but they're not always in sync by any means.
That's right. And we are at a point, I think, in our evolution where still, if you don't own it literally in the sense of having a piece of paper that's yours, that says you're a shareholder, you're not quite there yet. It takes a lot for people to get to that point.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to get to that point. I think we will get to it. We'll get to that point with education and with, there's that phrase, it takes a village to raise a child.
So that is a bit of a picture of community life, as it probably once was, and the work that it takes to reestablish it. I was just wondering if you are seeing, as you sort of survey the social finance field or the entrepreneur field, however you want to define that, associative economic principles just naturally emerging out of people's good common sense, whether that's community or whether just a desire for connection.
I think it's all of the above, John, and I think that's what this whole local mm-hmm. is about as well. I think people are wanting to start somewhere, but I don't think for a moment that we will stay there. I think, yes, we have to, you know, with what will happen with transportation costs and so on, it will make a lot more sense to do local and do things regionally. But at the end of the day, I think the planet is getting so much smaller, and it will feel like we're literally touching somebody across the planet as well. I think our consciousness will get to a point where we actually can feel that what we do here and what we pour down our sink or our drain or our detergent that we use is affecting somebody on the other side of the planet.
Hmm. So that's a development of a certain sense of feeling or imagination, actually, about the consequences of our acts.
Yeah.
And so that, how, well, this is kind of an odd question, but so how does that, I guess that directly affects our economic life in the sense of, it's not about, it's my right to pour that down a drain. It's about how does this affect somebody else.
Right.
And that's a huge shift.
It is. You know, and that's, I think that's so much why, you know, Rudolf Steiner touched on the fact that when you talk about finance and you get in more into the economic area of the world, that's where you actually want to build brotherly and sisterly connection and brotherly and sisterly love. And because that's where you have the possibility to really meet human needs and be aware of human needs and be aware of the consequences of the need to maybe violating or supporting.
Now I'm going to ask you the $64,000 question. What, from your perspective, what is RSF's role in that? What does it bring to the table in the midst of all of these possible places to be in the field of social finance?
Yeah, I mean, RSF, because the world is moving so fast and so many larger institutions are getting involved in social finance / impact investing / socially responsible investing. I don't know what else. I'm sure we can come up with other terms that have been used over the years.
But ethical investing, that's one that's been
ethical,
used.
Ethical, that's true. Ethical was a big one in the 80s.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And in some ways I liked it because, you know, while, you know, it depends on what people's version of ethics are, what I liked about it is that it did touch on that intangible aspect of thinking about the consequences of your investing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something nice about that term. But anyway, so there's so much money moving, so much capital now starting to move in this direction. And, you know, I think RSF's role is to constantly deepen and to constantly ask the hard questions and to use the money that's been entrusted to it, whether it's been donated through the philanthropic side, through the donor advised funds, or through the core lending program at RSF by people opening up a social investment fund, or whether it's through the mezzanine fund, by using each one of those moments when we make our when we receive that money and when we make our loans, that each opportunity is for furthering this kind of connection and the building of this kind of community. Because I think it's through that that you actually advance. You, the individual advances and the community advances in their capacity to experience what it's like to be in somebody else's shoes.
Hmm. Yeah, we don't normally think of financial transactions as sort of connected to sort of the deep, direct sort of personal experience of the world.
Right.
I mean,
and I would never want to just be a think tank, for example, because we could come up with all sorts of great things.
Right.
But here we're able to practice, and that's what I love, because we're not perfect, and I would never want to come across as if we know it all. There's so many other people who get caught up in that. They get a clear view, and then that's the way the world should be. And then they are shocked that no one else kind of is able to follow them. But I think for us, we're practicing. And we've always invited all sectors. You know, we've invited our borrowers, we've invited our grantees, we've invited our donors and our investors to join us and to participate in that practice.
That concludes our conversation. Thanks for listening.
For more information, find us online at rsfsocialfinance.org.